Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How have you been?
Oh, man. I have been mixed. I'm keep getting, like, allergies, but other than that, it's okay.
So, I'd have to say that allergies, when you live in Houston, a COVID hotspot, sounds like its own little layer of hell.
It was, well, I mean, I haven't, like, interacted with anybody, so I probably haven't got COVID. But it was still, like, there was a moment where, like, my son has also been having allergy symptoms. And I was like, wait, what are the odds of us both having allergies at the same time? Oh, God, we have COVID. There was, like, that moment where I was like, oh, no. But, yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, I believe it. My bright note is I got like 7 games in last week.
Mm-hmm.
And this week I got in 2. And then I won't get any more this week because I'm going camping. But next week I should start getting games in with the Web Warriors affiliation. So that's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's nice that... So I guess a few release announcements for those who are unaware. This week, the releases are Green Goblin and Miles Morales and Spider-Gwen, or Ghost Spider. And then in about a month, there is another set of releases. We have Doctor Strange and Wong. We have Ant-Man and Wasp. And we have Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Yeah. And then we should also have up for pre-sale the October new releases. And that's going to be stuff like Kingpin, Bullseye, you know, et cetera, the kind of the Hell's Kitchen troupe. And then we don't have solicitations on this yet, but my expectation then is that the November stuff is going to be X-Men. So,
oh, I'm so excited.
Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah. Anything else exciting going on in your life?
No, I want more games. Like, I'm jealous that you got 7 games last week. That's nice.
It was nice. It did involve, a lot of times I was like waking up at 6:30 in the morning to be able to accomplish this, which I suppose to most people who have kids or work or whatever, not that I don't work, but my job doesn't force me to wake up at 6:30. I'll just say usually. But yeah, it was worth it, waking up early and getting games in, so that was nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we can dive into the character that we're discussing this week. Do you want to read us the card?
I do. We're doing Ebony Maw this week. So Ebony Maw is a threat 5 character. He's size 2 with a medium move, so really normal. There, he's got 7 stamina on his healthy side, but then on his injured side, he's only got 4. So combined stamina, 11. He's got 2 physical defense, 2 energy defense, and then 6 mystical defense. Which those defensive abilities are important to keep in mind, because I'm just going to talk about his defensive power while I'm here, because he's got a reactive power that whenever he's targeted by an attack or needs to make a dodge roll, you can pay 2 to use this superpower, and he uses that mystical defense to defend or dodge. So this is a very powerful defensive ability. So if he's ever, you know, got to dodge terrain or he's got to make a physical or energy attack, he can use that mystical six defense. So it's a pretty amazing power. One of the better defensive tech. He's got two attacks, both of which are mystical. First one is called Black Tongue. It's a range 4, strength 5 attack that has zero cost. It has wild, sinister influence. So if you roll a wild, after the attack is resolved, you can advance the target character short. And when you make a Black Tongue attack, he gains one power. So he doesn't have like a strike that gains a ton of power. But it is actually on his more expensive attack. So his more expensive attack is called Herald of Doom. And it's a range 4, power 8, cost 4 attack. And it says the target character does not gain power for damage dealt by this attack. I'm sorry, I got that mixed up with strike. That's not what I meant. So the Herald of Doom is that your opponent will not get power for any damage dealt. And then it's a wild ability throw, where if it's a size 2 or less, you can throw it short. His next power is basically a throw. It's telekinetic powerhouse. You can throw a terrain feature of 4 or less within 3, and you can throw it long. So it's a pretty good terrain throwing ability. It does cost 3, so it's not, I wouldn't put it up there with like the very best throws in the game, but throwing size 4 terrain is still pretty good. I already mentioned Mind Over Matter, his defensive ability. He's got incredible psychic potential, which is pretty cool. Basically, he gains 2 additional power during the power phase. So he will always gain 3. And then he also has the ability to take the Mind or the Space Gem. So it's worth reminding, the Mind Gem is the one that cost 1, and you can move a enemy character short within 3. And then the Space Gem is,
and how much does that superpower cost to activate?
Mind Gem costs 2.
Okay.
So it pays for itself at least. But and the Space Gem is kind of the reverse of that. It is a threat 2 gem, and you can place a friendly character within 3. And it also costs 2. So similar gems, right? They both kind of fit with his controlling, manipulating character. He doesn't, like I said, he's the same on the backside, so none of his attacks or powers change. The only thing that does change is that he only has 4 stamina on the backside. So my initial thoughts are he's very squishy, and you kind of have to rely on Mind Over Matter to protect him. However, Herald of Doom and Black Tongue are both like really good attacks. And if you give him, I would say if you give him the Mind Gem, he's going to be gaining 4 power. And I think he's going to be able to do a whole lot. The question is he worth 5 or 6 or 7 threat in your list?
So I'm hoping you can talk me down from the ledge on this about Ebony Maw. Because most of my exposure to Ebony Maw has been in the MCU movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that he was actually a super cool character in that. And so I was very excited for him to come to Crisis Protocol. And it's been fun reading storylines about him as well. But I'm kind of disappointed with him in-game.
Yeah, he's
nope, you're supposed to talk me down off the ledge.
So my thoughts are that he's good, but I'm not, I struggle with him being 5 points, 5 threat. And if I struggle with him being 5 threat, like I can't justify saying you should 6. Take one of the gems,
yeah,
and make him 6 or 7. And so I think it's worth us talking about, like, where would he work so out?
Here is kind of my issue. You said, like, I think he's good, but he's too many points. But the issue is that, like, if you're too many points, you're not good.
Well, okay. So I think he's really good if your opponent takes Black Panther or Captain America. because I think he's a really good counter to both of them, and not just because he's a mystic attacker, but also because he has really good terrain throws. Also because he has which is another thing I do think we need to talk about, which is that he has a character superpower card. I guess it's not a superpower card, but he can basically stop an enemy character from using a superpower within range 5. And so basically, if an enemy character spends one or more power, he can pay 3 to cancel it. The character spends the power and is considered to have used it, but it doesn't have any effect. So, for example, superpowers that can only be used once a turn can't be used again. So I think Shh is a really amazing card, and I think that's part of why he might be a threat 5, is that because you have access to this like really incredible counter. And it's the only counter in the game. Like, there's no other thing that just stops something else from happening.
So I do think that that card is the best part about him. My issue is that, like, one team's tactic card that you use once a game is likely not sufficient to justify his cost.
Okay. So here's another reason I think he's really good. Last episode, we were talking about how you get put in this position sometimes where you don't want to use Blood Despair. Blood Despair. You don't want to use Blood Despair in a lot of games, because then on your next activation with that character, like, they don't have any power to do anything. And then they're like less offensive and less able to do anything to react to what your opponent is doing. Well, Ebony Maw, Herald of Dooming somebody, basically Ebony Maw can one shot a lot of characters. And they won't get any power from it. Like, you Herald of Doom someone, and most characters have lower mystic defenses, so I think being able to damage somebody without giving them any power is really, really good.
I think that's true.
I haven't had as great success as I have with Ebony Maw as I have with Agent Widow doing it, actually, but I think that's just because of the games I've played and how things have run out. But I think Ebony Maw's Herald of Doom attack is really good. And something I was thinking about trying to argue, like, I was trying to present a case for, it's really cool to take the Mind Gem just so you always get one Herald of Doom attack. And what I found is usually being range 4, like, he gets a Black Tongue and then he gets a Herald of Doom off. So that's pretty cool.
So I guess let me go into kind of my issues that I have with him.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my biggest is, you talked about, okay, where is he good at? Where does he fit, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
And excuse me. I don't think there's many places where he fits that well. And I guess to preface this, like, I don't want to be like a Debbie Downer this whole episode. Because I, like, that's just not what I like to put out, I guess. But it is, I guess, how I kind of honestly feel about him. And so I'll say the different reasons why, I guess. So, first issue, where does he play? So I feel quite strongly, after playing a bunch of games with or against the Black Order, that you need to have Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight in your Black Order list. I think that you, that you do want to have Thanos. I know when we had started talking about Black Order, I had kind of, you know, batted around the idea of maybe you don't have Thanos and you're doing Black Order without that and you're using the team cards, etc. But in one of the recent episodes, I said that I felt like that the Black Order Team Tactics cards looked a little bit better on paper than they actually were in game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that I like Black Order without Thanos. And part of it is that I don't know that I like Ebony Maw and Black Dwarf that much, and so it's kind of difficult to justify like rounding out your team with those two or picking them instead of Thanos. And part of the issue as well is that, so if you have the core of your Black Order list as Ebony Maw, or sorry, not Ebony Maw, Thanos, Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, just the base of that is 13 points. Mm-hmm. It's real easy to be at 14 or 15 points. And then at that point, like if you just don't have points to add five more in, then like there's one scenario where you can play 20. But even when you're in that situation, it feels like you're going to be better off taking a 2-point character and a 3-point character.
Hmm.
So I feel like there's just not situations where I'm excited to take him within the Black Order. So I guess, first off, before I move on from that, I'm curious on your reaction to that. Do you think that Ebony Maw does fit in well with list building for the Black Order?
I think most of the time, no. I think Ebony Maw is he's less of a generalist piece that you would like always build for, and he's more of a like counter to Avengers in my mind, specifically Black Panther and Captain America. But like, I think he's also good against Black Widow. Like if you're worried about Black Widow, counterattacking or something. Although I can't imagine he's going to be three away from her, honestly, but
I mean, so I do agree with you that he can potentially, or someone who fills that type of role could be interesting in a, like, let's say you sit down across your opponent, you see that they're running a single affiliation roster of Avengers. Mm-hmm. That is he's an interesting character to take in that situation, right? But it also kind of leads to the question of, okay, if you're in that situation, should you be considering MODOK instead?
Possibly. However, like you're coming up to a you're coming up to a competitive minded argument, and I wasn't even thinking of MODOK in Black Order until you said that. But
it does get tough to fit. Like you still have kind of the same issue I think that Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight are just like kind of the backbone or keystone of a Black Order list. Mm. And so dropping them out is difficult. And then you're again faced with the decision of, okay, am I doing Ebony Maw?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have enough points to fit Ebony Maw and Thanos? And you're going to have the same problem with MODOK.
Okay.
Because it's the same number of points. Like, can you fit Thanos and MODOK and Corvus Glaive and Ebony Maw into a list? And it's just really difficult to do that. Obviously. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about him outside of Avengers, or let's talk of him outside of Black Order then.
Okay.
Because I do think he has more of a place in Avengers than MODOK. The problem with that is, as soon as I say that, I think the argument is, wouldn't Doctor Strange be a better fit over Ebony Maw?
Or, I mean, I feel like Loki is going to fill kind of the same niche and fit even better with Avengers.
As a defensive character that has good mystic attacks. Maybe, yes. I don't think you're wrong with that. I think that's the problem with Ebony Maw in there.
Basically, my issue is that when I try to think of list construction, he doesn't fit well in my lists in Black Order. And when I think of him outside of affiliation, like with almost every other character, I can think of like, you know what, I think he'd be really good here. Mm-hmm. And there's very few situations where, I can't think of many situations where I'm like, you know what this list really needs is Ebony Maw.
Okay, so...
I do.
So
I will say that Shush is an amazing Team Tactics card, something very unique in the game. But again, it is still really difficult to justify a 5-point character for one Team Tactics card.
Yeah, but I don't think that's all he's got going. I mean, he has a good throw. He has an okay throw. He has a very good defensive ability. He powers up faster than a lot of people. My only concern with him, honestly, is that I think he wants to use up his power too quickly, and he doesn't have a great way to regain it without taking damage.
That's kind of the next thing I wanted to touch on that kind of bugs me about him, is that I initially was like, oh my god, he's going to have, like, just be rolling around in power and have so much of it. Mm-hmm. And it is cool. It is nice that he gets this extra power at the start, but he doesn't, like, the fact that he does not have an attack that generates power equal to the damage dealt is a really big liability. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that, so, you know, MODOK obviously does not have the incredible psychic potential ability. He's just gaining one a turn. But, like, I've had so many games where MODOK is just, like, swimming in an ocean of power because he does, you know, two psychic attacks and the damage dealt becomes power. And like, the amount of power that he ends up having ends up being quite a bit more in my play experience than Ebony Maw does.
I wish I had a better argument for you here, but I mean, I think Ebony Maw has some serious flaws, and I think you're right. He struggles, even though he's getting three a turn base, it's very easy to, like, make a Black Tongue attack and then make a Herald of Doom attack, and then someone can come up and just smack him, and he's only got two defense dice.
Right.
So,
and that doesn't feel good. And it's especially worse when on your injured side, you go down pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
I was trying to talk about lists, and I actually think that he kind of fits well into Wakanda, because you have a good bodyguard for him in Okoye. He can throw terrain, which is something that Wakanda lacks, and he's got a good mystic attack. And so I was kind of imagining a list where Okoye keeps close to him, and then him and Shuri can hold a back point while T'Challa can go up, and Ebony Maw and Okoye can be a little bit more conservative. And then you could, that would be like, what is that? 4-3-2-5. So,
and it, like, feels
you, like you have a little bit of wiggle room.
Yeah, I'm. So if you had, I if I was taking him, I would likely be looking at, like, Black Panther, Killmonger, Okoye, and Ebony Maw as the mm-hmm. start of the list, and that's at 15 points.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't hate that, and I think it's an interesting build, and I think it helps cover up some of his problems. And I think he fits well in that affiliation. And I'm not even saying that would be my first 15-point list, but I think it would be a really cool one to go up against, like, Avengers and have that counter.
So I don't want to sound like a broken record, or I don't want to sound like this win-at-all-cost power game or whatever, but, like, why would the list not just be better with MODOK?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if let's you know, if you look at this scenario again, MODOK can, so a lot of times it seems like a lot of the Wakanda lists, they're pushing people off of objectives, doing, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And MODOK has his superpower where he can make an enemy advance, which plays into it. The other thing that plays into it well, in my opinion, is it gives you the option to play aim lackeys on Killmonger, which is usually a combo that you see in Cabal, but is obviously very viable in this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, no, I don't know.
I think we might
be getting to the point where we have to just say, well, he's a thematic choice or he's a Black Order choice, and maybe he's not as good. He does struggle, I think, comparing him to MODOK, because they're a little similar, and I do think MODOK does those better. MODOK doesn't have I don't think MODOK has as good a defensive ability, getting 6 defense dice, but I do think Ebony Maw can't attack and defend very consistently, so you kind of have to choose to just hoard your power or to make good big attacks.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, let's pause there, and I'll just do a little teaser preview of where we'll pick up in the bonus episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I want us to have kind of that discussion of survivability of MODOK versus Ebony Maw, not to beat the dead horse into the ground or whatever. But I do think it's an interesting discussion on which character we think is more survivable. So, but we can pause there and we can start talking about our comic book club.
Okay. So we read the Black Order comic called Black Order. It was only 5 issues, and it was it's a Black Order comic that's separated from Thanos. This takes place pretty recently. I think it's 2018. And it stars the main Black Order members, Corvus, Black Dwarf, Proxima Midnight, Ebony Maw, and it includes Black Swan, who's become a Black Order member more recently than the original Infinity comic, but like we've seen her several times already. So in this comic, you kind of see the Black Order being sent out on like a mission by a character called the Grandmaster. And they don't appreciate it, but it's in another comic book, they were basically like brought back to life by him so that they could be champions in a big global, not global, universal competition. And in fact, if you're interested in the Grandmaster, our next week's comic is also going to be about the Grandmaster and the Black Order. So that'll connect pretty well. But so basically, they learn about this weapon. It's a bow and arrow that you can fire at a planet and rewrite the planet's the planet's DNA. The entire planet can be like changed, so you could shoot a planet and make everybody on the planet obedient to you, or you could shoot a planet and the arrow could make the entire planet like fish or something. So they find out that this warlord has it, and they are
That's
trying
emperor to you, sir.
I'm sorry. Yes. What is it? Emperor? He's got some stupid name. I'm gonna look it up, but this emperor character is using it to just reinforce his power,
he'll shoot an arrow at a planet and it'll instantly become his subject.
Like his, yeah. Or the threat so is everyone, he can destroy it as
yeah,
well.
Everyone else is like, wow, how's this buffoon kind of like expanding his empire so quickly? And then it turns out this is his big secret, that he has this super weapon.
Yeah. So the Black Order wants to get it so that they can have this power. And they've been sent by the Grandmaster to get it. So they end up teaming up with the rebels who are fighting the evil emperor. And the rebels are they're just like, these people will help us. And the Black Order is not making promises. They're just saying, we will kill the Emperor. We'll do it. Don't worry. Attican. His name is Emperor Attican. So they end up betraying and basically going through and, you know, fighting all the leaders and abandoning the rebellion. And by the end of the story, they end up mutating the entire planet into, like, monstrous, just gross people with the arrow after, you know, tricking Attican. There's a pretty cool bit I like about Nova, who is, you know, one of the big amazing space heroes, and he becomes under sway because of the arrow. But generally, it's a lot of the Black Order betraying people and ignoring the cries for help because they have a mission and something better to do. And by the end of the story, the Grandmaster just teleports in and shows everybody how powerful he is and takes the bow from Corvus Glaive. And he offers the Black Order, like, you can come and be my champions and fight for me forever. And they reject it and go off on their own ways. But we get to see a lot of just the Black Order being awful and serving their own interests. And I'm still a little uncertain, like, by the end of the comic, like, Black Swan is very clearly the strongest of the Black Order. So it's a very there are some parts that make me wonder why Corvus Glaive is still in charge. I did kind of get that feeling, but
excuse me.
There's a really good part where, like, Ebony Maw basically tries to betray everybody, but doesn't work. It's pretty good.
So, one of the things that I liked a lot about this arc is that it is 5 episodes long, comics, whatever, and each comic is told from a different point of view of a member of the Black Order.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool seeing, like, the different perceptions that they each have, the different ways that they view reality, their different internal monologues. It starts off with Corvus Glaive, and he's like, why don't people think I'm funny?
Yes, yeah. And he talks about, like, I have a subtle wit that goes unnoticed. Yeah.
And his wife, he's like, he asks his wife, do you think I'm funny? And she's like, no, no. And he's like, well, what about when I make, you know, this gesture with my eye, or, you know, when I do this subtle thing? And it's like, it's just quite amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets to Black Dwarf, and, you know, you expect him to be this, you know, dull, hulking character, and instead they do the switcheroo, and he's like this very thoughtful, cerebral character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. And so overall, that was something that I liked a lot about this arc.
Yeah. Like, Black Dwarf being, Black Dwarf is just so interesting none of his actions show these things, right? But it's like, he's like, I'm sacrificing. I'm so glad that Proxima and Corvus are together, even though I love Proxima because they don't feel the emptiness. And it's just very, yeah, the point of view that, and it's each issue gets a different character's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really fun, kind of getting their interior monologue during these bits.
So since this arc is kind of, since we're focusing on Ebony Maw, what do you think of his, like, betrayal part? And I guess I wasn't totally sure if he actually didn't betray them, and, like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Okay, so one of Ebony Maw's things that I've noticed in other comics is he wants to be in charge, and he is, like, constantly trying to betray people or set it up where he can. And so I think it's very clear he betrayed them. I think in the beginning of the last issue, he says, like, I shall lead us. Mm-hmm. The time of Corvus Glaive is over. And like, I know what he's planning and what he's going to do, which is why it's easy for me to betray him and, you know, help. And so the whole like he gets the bow, he makes Nova run away. Like I think that whole deal is, it just so happens, right, that like Corvus gets the bow, and then he's just like, yeah, I'm back with you, like we're the Black Order together. But I think that's kind of expected in their group, that like Ebony Maw would betray them.
Yeah, it did kind of seem like they were like expecting him to betray them, and had like taken countermeasures in anticipation, maybe.
Yeah, and I think I guess I do have to assume this a little, but I think they expect Ebony Maw to betray them, and he will only betray them if they fuck up enough that it's okay, because then the strongest will be in charge. And I really do kind of get that vibe, where it's like, it's that villainous, like, if Ebony Maw can ever trick us all the way and we can't stop him, like, he deserves to be in charge, and we probably deserve to die. Or that's the way I take it, at least.
So, do you have any additional background on Ebony Maw to go over?
No, really. We've kind of gone over almost everything that I know about the Black Order in these comics, because, Jay, this is almost every appearance of the Black Order in true, comics. Yeah. We've read all of them. There is one bit. I know that Ebony Maw is one of the oldest. Like, he's been on Thanos' crew for, like, since, like, way before Thanos became big. So he is one of the older, like, members of Thanos' piratey crew. I think it was him and Proxima Midnight show up in they made a prequel comic that explains Gamora. Like, how did Thanos get a child Gamora, and like her being on the pirate crew and everything. And you have Ebony Maw with much more hair to try to make him look younger. But he's always been this way. Like the betray, like I'll betray everybody if it fits my needs. And he wants to be in charge. He was trying to supplant Thanos for a while. And I think he decided that it was easier to just serve Thanos and try to be under Thanos because of how powerful he is. I kind of enjoyed the bit about the end where he said, like, in the Ebony Maw interior monologue, where it's like, if I was to turn my eye upon our own group, I know what I would see. I would see resentment, jealousy, doubt, bitterness, and betrayal. But I would also see honor, loyalty, and love. Like, that's, I like that they have this villainous group that is so close, because I can't think of any other like bad guy team that is that like well bonded. Maybe the Thunderbolts, after like they got rid of Baron Zemo being evil and they tried to be good guys. But that's pretty cool. I think it's very unique for villains to have that.
So normally I would ask, why did we pick this arc, but you've kind of already touched on that we've basically already mined the Black Order as much as we could.
There's so few Black Order comics. Like, if anything, I think this one probably should have been last. But because we're doing Ebony Maw, I wanted this one to be the Ebony Maw comic, and next one will be more of a generic Black Order comic.
Okay.
But it's very difficult to find comics for them. They're so new.
What would your excitement level be to have the Black Swan be made by Atomic Mass at some point?
Not very high.
Okay.
Not very. No, I mean, I just... All right. So I don't mean to disparage this at all, but there's a part of me that still remembers when nobody knew who Thanos was. And like...
Oh, hipster Greg.
To me, I would rather have like the Fantastic Four, and that's going to be the problem with Marvel Crisis Protocol, is people always want the things they want. And so for me, I'm more excited about like 90s superheroes, because that's what I read when I was a kid. So the fact that they're so recent and that I have so little material for them. Black Swan actually has way more comics than the rest of the Black Order. So I think she would be pretty cool. She's because she was in the Avengers, and she's like a universe hopping character. And she, like, when they said, I think Ebony Maw said, like, our adopted sister, like, they're talking about Black Swan as the adopted sister of the Black Order. And so I like, that's cool. I don't know. And I haven't read all those comics. I've just read a few of them. So I think Black Swan would be a really cool one, but there are just, in all of the Marvel universe, I don't think she's super unique in her, like, powers and what she can do. And I don't think she's super iconic. Like, we got the Black Order that we got because of the movies.
Right.
And that's okay. I just would like it if we got all the characters in the movies now. Like, there's still Avengers from the films that we haven't gotten, so it'd be cool if we got them.
It'd be pretty cool to see Scarlet Witch and the Quicksilver.
Oh, so cool.
The main reason I would be excited is just for more list building options, I guess, for the Black Order.
Mm-hmm.
But I can appreciate your point. So do you have any comments on the creative team of this comic?
I'd have to double check. I think this is one of those that it was designed by a committee almost. And, like, you can even tell that some of the art and whatnot was done by, like, very different people in different issues. So, yeah, Philip Tan did a lot, and I think he's one of the more classic Marvel guys, but I think he only did one or two issues, and overall, this is just one of those, a ton of people did it. However, the writer, Derek Landy, like, I don't recognize that name at all, but I would like to read more from him because I thought he did a really good job writing this. I think I Googled his name and nothing stood out as a high point I could recommend to our listeners.
No. All right. Well, do you have any closing thoughts on this arc before we close out this episode?
I really enjoyed this. I think if you like the Black Order, like, this would be a really good thing. You could buy it and just have it on a shelf because it's a good read.
Yeah, there was a lot of things I liked about this arc, so I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Greg, can you tell us about our next comic book arc?
Yeah, so our next arc, we're going to be reading The Avengers. This, because of the way Avengers is written in Marvel Unlimited, you kind of have to be careful. So this is Avengers from 2016, and we're reading issues 675 to 680. So this is the beginning of a bigger arc called No Surrender. So you might have seen this advertised in the last few years, like Avengers No Surrender. But it's a big epic arc, and the Black Order play a pretty significant role in the beginning of it. So we're only reading the beginning. Avengers issues 675 to 680.
Okay, so Greg, if there are any of our listeners who have been on the fence about backing us on Patreon, what would you say to those people?
I was going to make a joke about how, like, supporting us is less than a cup of coffee, but I really hate it when people do that to me. So, supporting us on Patreon is less than a cheap taco per episode. And Jay and I really, really appreciate all of our Patreons supporting us. It is a huge deal. Like, that taco money is used to allow us to keep this going, and it's really been really swell to like meet up with people on Discord, and I have just really appreciated it. And so when you back us on Patreon, you get access to our Discord that we team up with the Across the Bifrost guys. We share a Discord. And it's a really good Discord. Like, I get so much useful chat out of it, and it's really fun to start predicting things way too early, like we did today when they announced Ghost Rider's rules. You get, not only do you get every episode, you get a bonus episode, and then you do get our episodes 1 week early. So if you are not a Patreon backer, if you go on and back us right now, you won't just get our bonus episode, you'll also get next week's episode. So you will have, if you back us right now, you will have three new episodes to go listen to right away. And like I said, we really appreciate every one of our backers. It is a huge deal to Jay and I that we have y'all's support, and it really helps us a lot. So thank you very much.
So for me to just close out, I'll say thank you to everyone who listens, but especially people who are supporting us on Patreon. We appreciate it, and you guys are awesome.
The most awesome.